In our first reading today, we hear about one of the key moments in the history of the world when God appeared to Moses in the burning bush and sent him to deliver his people Israel from Egypt. It was certainly an event that changed the course of human and salvation history. But I want to focus on one element in particular from that event today. And that's, you know, after God had appeared to Moses. You know, Moses asks him, "Who am I to say when the Israelites ask, 'Has sent me?'" He's asking, you know, what name am I supposed to give? And I always thought that was a strange question, because I don't think I would have asked that question if I were in that situation. You know, if God appeared to me and he said, "I am God," I'd be like, "What's your name?" It's like, you know, so it just struck me as an odd question. But I think it's a very good question for the Israelites, because if we look at the condition that the Israelites were in, you know, they had been in Egypt for 430 years. And it had been about 5 centuries since God had appeared to Abraham and promised the promised land to him. That's a long time period. If we think the United States isn't even 250 years old, you know, for us to go back 5 centuries, that's like the time of Christopher Columbus. So it had been a long time since God had appeared to Abraham. And the Israelites had been for over 400 years surrounded by polytheism in Egypt. And in large part, they had assimilated to the culture around them. And we know this because later, after they're out in the desert, when Moses goes up on Mount Sinai, within 40 days, they're worshiping a golden calf. And why are they worshiping a golden calf? Because that was one of the Egyptian gods. And so we know that this polytheistic belief had been absorbed into their hearts. The Egyptians had all sorts of different gods. They had a god for the sun. They had a god for the Nile River. They had fertility gods. They worshipped frogs for fertility. You know, they worshipped cattle. They were the god of weather. And so it kind of makes sense that Moses says, "What name am I supposed to give? Which god am I going to say has sent you?" Because they were polytheistic. And then the Lord's response, he says, "I am who am." And there's a lot built into this name. You know, the first thing that we can see is what he says is, "I'm the God that actually exists." You know, unlike all the Egyptian gods, which are false, none of them are real. He is the one who actually exists. And so that's part of what that name reveals. And part of what that name reveals when he says, "I am who am," what he's saying is he is the very source of existence. He is the one through whom all things exist. And so it's an all-encompassing title. He's not one of many gods. He's not just the god of a river or of a mountain like the Egyptians worshipped. He is the source of all existence. He is the one who has existed from all eternity because it belongs to his very nature to exist. He is all-knowing, meaning he is omniscient, and he is present everywhere. He is omnipresent. And so when he says, "I am who am," what he's revealing is that he is the one God who is all existence. And he is entirely distinct and different from all the other gods of the Egyptians. The Egyptians came up with their own gods. They were figments of their own imagination. And so to a certain degree, in their own imagination, they could manipulate these gods. But the God of Israel is not one that we can manipulate, because he is the true God. And we don't get to manipulate him. We look to him as the source of all truth. If we jump forward to the time of Jesus Christ, there is when he was in conflict with some of the Jewish leaders. This is in John chapter 8. One of the things that Jesus says to them is he says, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." He spoke the name of God, which was a name that was so sacred to the Jews that they weren't even allowed to speak the name of God. The name that God had revealed at the burning bush. They wouldn't even say that name because it was so holy. And Jesus Christ not only says that name, but he applies it to himself. You have to imagine how shocking that would be. You know, when he's claiming that he is the God who has revealed himself to Moses, and he is the source of all existence standing right in front of them. He says, before Abraham was, I am. You know, he is saying that he is the all-powerful source of all existence. And he's going to prove that's the case through his resurrection and through all the other miraculous works that he does. Just as the Israelites were surrounded by a culture with a false religion, we're in a similar situation because our culture teaches a false religion. And ours isn't polytheistic the way that the Egyptians were polytheistic. Our culture actually denies all religious truth and all religious authority beyond ourselves. In our culture, everyone basically wants to make themselves a god and determine for themselves what's right or wrong. And people don't want any moral judgments or any moral authority to be applied to them. Basically, people want to live the way that they want to live and choose whatever morality they want to live by. And they don't want anybody else, you know, applying judgments to them. You know, who are you to tell me how to live? Or who is the church to have any moral teachings? People want the absolute freedom to make themselves gods. And so in our culture, people will scoff or they'll get angry or upset anytime anyone claims any religious authority. We certainly see that in the culture around the church. And sometimes it can even slip into the mindset of members of the church. You know, we see this in a variety of ways. You know, people will say, well, I can go up and receive communion. I don't have to listen to the church's rules, whether it's fasting an hour before Mass or whether it's the necessity of being in a state of grace. They'll say, well, I don't need to abide by those. Or holy days of obligation. Who's the church to say this? Or the teaching on marriage. We can decide for ourselves what a marriage is. You know, we see this, what we call relativism, and it's very common in our culture. And so as members of the church, it's very important for us to recognize that our church is founded by the supreme God who is the source of all existence. We cannot manipulate him, but he is the source of all truth. And as Christians, we look to him as the source of our morality. And not only do we look to Jesus Christ as the all-powerful God, but also he has given authority to his mystical body, the church. He says to Peter, what you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and what you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. So Jesus Christ has entrusted authority to his mystical body. And so our attitude as Christians is not one that, like our culture of apathy or of a rejection of authority, but as members of the church, we have a reverence for Jesus Christ and his church, a deep and profound reverence and respect for those teachings, because we know that Jesus Christ is the God who is I am who am. And he imparts authority to his mystical body, the church. And so it's important for us not to assimilate to the apathy and the relativism within our culture, but to recognize who the God who we serve and the authority that he has and that he has entrusted to the church. You know, within the church, we have the splendor of truth, the teachings of Jesus Christ. And we know that when we come here to Mass, it's not just bread and wine that we worship, but we worship in spirit and truth the true God, and that the Eucharist is truly the body, blood, soul, and divinity of the one God who is true and the source of all existence. And if we come forward to receive the Eucharist and receive the body and blood of Jesus Christ into ourselves, we are receiving I am who am. The one who is the source and origin of all existence.